rack your brain trying to come up with ways to put a little something extra aside, but nothing seems to work. No matter how hard you try, there's always just a little bit more month left over at the end of your money. So how about some money-saving tips and tricks that actually work? You know, more than just reusing coffee filters or cutting dryer sheets in half. Financial planner and teacher Rob West has some ways to save that are like money in the bank. And now, we're pre-recorded today, so please don't call in, but we do have some great questions already lined up that I think you'll enjoy and find informative. I'm Steve Moore. Super glad you could join us for today's edition of MoneyWise Live. Now, Rob, we're not making fun of people who actually do cut their dryer sheets in half, are we?
No, not at all. More power to them. But while clever cost-cutting ideas like that will save you money, they take a long time to add up to much. Today, we're talking about savings that will add up, hopefully, a bit more quickly.
All right, good. Let's get started then. What's first?
Well, Steve, number one is probably the biggest thing you can do to save money, and that's get out of debt and stay there. Stop using credit cards unless you pay off the balance each month. Pay down what you owe. Use the snowball method that we've talked about many times before on the program. Start mm-hmm. with the smallest debt first. When that's paid, move on to the next and so on. By the way, if you missed the program a few days ago, check out our archives at moneywiselive.org on snowball versus avalanche. I think you'll find it interesting. If you're paying thousands of dollars a year in interest on credit cards, imagine what you could do in a retirement account instead, earning money for you, not the credit card company. Yeah. And number two isn't new either, but it's really essential. Automate your savings. Have part of your paycheck deposited automatically. First, to build up your emergency fund. Then, when that's fully funded, build up your retirement account. If you rely on yourself to do it manually, well, it may not get done.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of number two, I can tell you that. Let's see. We're focusing on techniques that have rapid results. So what's next, Rob?
Number three, we've also talked about before, but I wonder how many people actually do it, and that is put away part of a pay raise to get more money going into savings for you. That could apply to tax refunds as well. I'd say actually bank at least half of your raises and all of your tax refund. Now, number four is not so obvious. In fact, most people don't even associate it with money. It's take care of yourself. That is, get and stay healthy. Eat right, exercise, and get plenty of sleep. Watch your weight. This is because healthcare is expensive. No matter what kind of plan you have, the less healthcare you use, the more you save. We've talked about this one before. Studies show that if you're overweight and out of shape, on average, and it's just an average, you'll spend more on healthcare in your later years.
That's right. I watch my weight, Rob. I watch that needle go up and up and up.
All right.
I think I just need a new scale. That's all right. What about you, Rob? Do you work out? What exercises are you into?
Yeah, you know, I like running periodically. It would be my preferred approach. I don't spend much time in the gym. I need to. I just don't make time for it.
Okay. Number five, what do you have?
All right. Number five, also obvious, but extremely effective. If you want to save more, make more. Take a side job or put in extra hours at work. You could drive for Uber or Lyft. You could rent out a room through Airbnb. If you work just 10 hours a week at $10 an hour, well, that'll add up to about $5,000 a year or more.
Yeah.
Now, number six is tricky, and if you are having trouble with number one, getting and staying out of debt, just forget about number six altogether, and that is use a reward credit card. It goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, do this only if you always pay off your balance in full each month and live on a spending plan. Otherwise, it makes no sense because interest charges will just gobble up any rewards you might accrue. But if you're disciplined, using a reward card can really save you some money. Some cards give 1% or even 2% back on all purchases. Some will give you as much as 5% back on certain purchases. A reward card could save you a few hundred dollars a year. Depending on how much you spend, it could even be more than that.
Okay, but the first month you fail to pay off the balance, drop that card right into the shredder. Presuming you have a gas-powered shredder, we need something kind of hefty for some of those cards. All right, we've talked about number seven before, Rob. What is it? It's our final one here for this segment.
Yeah, exactly. It's worth your time, perhaps even a couple of $100s. And that is, if you get on the phone with your insurance and credit card companies and ask for a rate or interest rate reduction, they may just go along with it. With your credit card, just ask for a lower rate, and oftentimes they'll comply.
That's right. I've done it myself, and so far it's always worked. This is MoneyWise Live with Rob West, taking your calls right after this. If you're listening right now, please don't try to call. Today's program is an encore broadcast with lots of interesting information still ahead, so please stay with us. This is MoneyWise Live, where we do our very best to remember that God owns it all, and we're to be good managers of it, or as the Bible refers to it, good stewards. And Rob, when we took our break, I had mentioned that I have tried several of these things, and they always worked for me. I was referring to tip number 7, where you just ask certain companies to reduce their rates. I've done it with credit cards, I've done it with car insurance, and I've done it with cable TV. And in every case, cable TV, in every case, my rates were lowered or reduced, whether they were fees or interest rates. You don't have to go in with guns blazing or threats or anything like that. Just, hey, guys, I've been a good customer for a long time, but these rates are kind of killing me. They don't fit my budget. Can you help? And in every case, it helped. And so, you know, that certainly is worth a try.
I like it, Steve. Yeah, it's really just your time. And what is your time worth? It's probably worth a lot, but not as much as you could save by just asking that question. So we highly encourage it.
Well, another thing we encourage is that you check us out on Facebook. We're there on Facebook. If you're a Facebook member, you can find us. You can like us on Facebook when you go to MoneyWise Media. A number of people have gone there today, Rob. In fact, our question of the day was, what money tricks have you come across that have worked for you? And a number of people have responded.
Well, that's exactly right. And we'll be checking this throughout the program. And so if you have some money-saving ideas that have worked for you, perhaps share them with the MoneyWise Live community. And we'll be checking in on them and perhaps read some of them throughout the program. Mike writes, avoid any purchase that will require you to pay interest. He said, set up automatic payments of your credit card balance in full so that you never have to pay interest or have a late fee. And that automation is a nice little tip there to make sure you don't ever forget about it. And as he said, make sure you're paying it in full if you set up that automated payment. Laureen said, I always pay myself and put aside money for emergencies. And that's kept me afloat. Richard had a great idea. He said, buy items at the end of a season. So winter coats during a spring sale or shorts in winter sales, which is a great idea. He said, as long as you use a credit card and pay it off in full each month, he prefers it over a debit card because it's easier to dispute a charge. You don't have to wait to get your money back in your checking account after a fraudulent purchase. And that is a good tip there. And then someone else said, be your own lender. And I think the big idea there is if you can sock away money for your next car purchase and buy with cash, well, that's a wonderful way to save yourself a bunch of money. So thanks for those great ideas. MoneyWise Media, when you do a search at Facebook, you'll find us there. You can like us and share your tips with us.
And I think my producer is telling me in my headphone here, Rob, that for the very best tip today, later in the program, we're giving away a brand new Pontiac. Is that true?
I have not heard that. No, I don't. Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Wait a minute. In my other headphone, I'm being reminded that Pontiac is no longer in business. Well, see, we meant well. We meant well, and that's what's important. Okay. Knoxville, Tennessee. Howie, good to have you out there, buddy. How can we help?
I need some financial advice, and from what I've heard, been listening to you guys on radio, you guys are pretty smart.
Oh, I don't know. You must have us confused with another program, Howie.
Nevertheless, we'll give it a shot, Howie.
Okay. I've got about $4,000 in savings, and it's just sitting there, and I'd like to invest it. I don't know where to go, what to do, or a friend of mine buys gold bars, and about 2 bars is all I get. But I don't know when I don't know where to invest, so I'm not going to hold you guys up very long.
Oh, no problem. So you said you have 4,000 and you said to invest, but if you don't mind, let me ask you a couple of questions. And what I'm trying to determine here, Howie, is how this $4,000 fits into the rest of your financial life. So, first of all, do you have any debt?
I don't have any.
Okay. Not a home, nothing. Home mortgage.
No.
Okay, great. Congratulations. That's phenomenal. Do you have any other savings apart from this $4,000 that might be an emergency fund of some kind?
No, I don't. That's it.
Okay, great. All right. And now, on your monthly spending and income, do you have a written budget that you're operating by?
I am. I pay time I get everything paid, I got about maybe like $400 left.
Okay. Have you ever taken time to reduce all of those expenses to a piece of paper and categorize them and really design a system to control the flow of money in and out just so nothing slips through your fingers?
No. I went through a divorce, and buddy, if you went through one of them, it's devastating. And I'm just now getting my feet back on dry land.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, here's what I'm excited about. I'm delighted to hear that you say on average you have about $400 a month left over. That's good. That means you're living within your means. You would absolutely benefit from having a spending plan. And I'm talking about where you take 30 days, Howie, and you track all of your income and expenses. You put that on paper, and then you develop a system that works for you. It could be a web-based system or a smartphone app. It could be the envelope system, which thousands of people still use very, very successfully, and that is where you take your discretionary items, the things that aren't just a recurring bill every month where you can automate it or just write a check, but things like eating out or whatever it might be, hobbies, and you actually fund with cash an envelope for each of those items every month just to keep yourself in check so that when that category is empty, you don't pull money from somewhere else, you reduce spending or cut it off for the month and wait till the next month. So I think that would benefit you. Now, with regard to this $4,000, what we would encourage you to do, Howie, is to have 3 to 6 months' expenses in a liquid savings account. This is going to be where it's secure. It's not too accessible, but you can get to it if you need it, and you're earning a little bit of interest. Right now, in a high-yield online savings account, which is FDIC insured and could be linked to your bank with an automated transfer if you ever need it, you'll get about 2.25% interest on deposits. I would look at Marcus. I would look at Ally. I also like Capital One 360. They're all paying about 2.25% interest. I don't like the idea of you investing this money because when we're investing, we want at least a 7 to 10 year time horizon. And we really don't have money to do that until we have this emergency fund in place. Because if you have unexpected expenses come your way, and we all do at some point, we don't want you to have to rely on credit cards or some other means to fund them. That's where you need to be pulling from is this emergency savings. So in my estimation, I'd encourage you to open one of these online savings account at one of the institutions I mentioned, link it up with your checking account, deposit this $4,000, and then continue depositing that $400 a month until you get up to at least 3 months' expenses. And then we should be talking about setting aside some longer-term savings in perhaps a Roth IRA where you can invest it.
Now, Rob, the three banks you mentioned, Marcus, Ally, and Capital One, we have no personal or business relationship with them. They're just three banks that tend to pay higher interest rates. Is that what you're saying, online banks?
Well, that's right. A couple of reasons, Stephen. You're right. We don't have any relationship with them. I just review all of the banks periodically, and I'm looking for not only high interest, although that's a primary consideration. I'm looking for those that really purpose themselves to deliver excellent customer service and to be very user-friendly in terms of their smartphone apps or their website. All three fit into that category.
All right. Hey, Howie, we're glad that you called today. We wish you the best. Thank you very, very much. When we come back, we'll chat with Jay in Jacksonville, Alabama, and Sherry's in Cleveland. That and much, much more when MoneyWise Live returns. Stay with us. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. Find us on the web at moneywiselive.org. But today we're not live, so If you hear that phone number, please don't call, but do stick around. Lots of good information ahead. It's MoneyWise Live. He's Rob West. I'm Steve Moore, and we're happy to be taking your calls today. Jay's in Jacksonville, Alabama. What do you have for us, Jay?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
What I do is use my rewards credit card to purchase pre-owned gift cards. There's plenty of clearance houses online where you get anywhere from 5 to 40% off the gift cards. So you not only get your reward points, you've saved a ton on the stores you're going to go to anyway.
Wow, Jay, look at you. That's great. Yeah, you're really working the system there. I like it.
Pennies, yeah.
That's it.
I stretch them as far as I can.
Jay, for those who have never heard of this concept, buying a pre-owned gift card, I mean, first of all, it sounds a little shady, but it's not. But what is it? How does that work? Where do these cards come from? Do you know?
People who get them as gifts or don't get it, they return something. They don't want to buy that from that store again. There's places that will purchase them, and then they turn around and sell them again.
Yeah.
So they're making essentially a little bit of money in the transaction.
Yeah, essentially the way it works is if you have this gift card and whatever reason you want to unload it and you're willing to sell it at a discount and get the cash for it, then somebody else buys it at a discount. And it's really a business out there for people. But it's a great way, as Jay said, especially if you're using a rewards credit card, to get money to purchase a gift card for a store you would already be spending at, perhaps with a budgeted item, and buy it at a discount. You know, there are other ministries out there, Steve, where you can actually donate unused gift cards, and they're then turned into dollars to use for ministry purposes. Right. So nonprofits out there doing a similar type of thing. I love it. Great idea.
And Rich, our producer, is telling me that one place, and there are many, one place you can check out is giftcardgranny.com, gift card granny, and please give her our best if you decide to work with her. Rob, did you get an email?
On Facebook. And by the way, you can find our Facebook page and like us at facebook.com/MoneyWiseLive. Shelbster said, I use an envelope system for saving. And we were talking about this just a while ago. He said, I label my envelopes vacation, savings, new purchase. He has different envelopes for different items, and then he funds that envelope every time he gets a paycheck. Now, you can do that with a physical envelope. You can also do that with a virtual envelope with one of these online savings accounts that doesn't charge you any fees to set up multiple savings accounts, so you can actually have them tagged for different purposes. But I'll tell you, Steve, the envelope system has been around for a long time, and it's still working for a lot of folks.
It's fantastic, too. Again, that's what we're looking for, something that works for you, something that takes your attention and focuses it on your pocketbook, on your wallet, on what God has given you. Whatever system works for you, that's the best system. Cleveland, Ohio. Carrie, what do you have for us today?
Hi. Actually, I'm from Cleveland, Tennessee. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm apologize.
No, that's okay. So I do something that some people think is a little bit silly, but it really does work. So when I use my debit card, I write down the purchase amount. So if I spend $3.40 at the store, I write down $3.40. But when I do the subtraction, I'll actually subtract an amount of $4. And I do that with like every purchase. And so that way at the end of the month, I can balance my checkbook because I can check with the amount, you know. But it's like putting change in a jar, and you know, you don't really feel that 60 cents here and 70 cents there.
Yeah.
And usually typically at the end of the month, I have anywhere between 80 to 120 extra dollars, and I will turn around and pay that on a credit card or, you know, on a dental bill. One month, God was so gracious. I don't even know how it happened. It had to be God, but I actually ended up having 236 extra dollars.
Wow!
Just by doing that, and it came at a time where we desperately needed it, and so instead of having to use a credit card for something we needed, the money was there. And
that's
so it's just a neat way to just have a little bit of a cushion in your checking account, and you don't feel the hardship. I mean, because you don't, you don't feel 60, 70 cents, you know, a dollar here, a dollar there. So,
yeah. I love that idea, Carrie, because essentially it's forced savings, but you're doing it in these micro savings contributions, in a sense, into your checking account on paper. So you're not feeling it as much. And then over time, that adds up. You know, what's interesting is one of the new tech companies in the finance area that's getting a lot of notoriety lately is a company called Acorns. And they have something very similar that takes exactly what you're doing and automates it. You'll find it online at Acorns.com. And essentially, they invest your spare change. So if you link either a checking account or a bank account to it, every time you make a transaction, they'll round it up to the next dollar, deposit that amount in an account that can then be invested in low-cost exchange-traded funds. Really interesting concept based on the same idea. You may want to check it out. I've been using it just to test it out. I really like it. And again, it's an automated forced savings, but not only does it force the savings, it actually will automatically invest it for you, which is really interesting.
That's amazing. And Carrie, we're glad that you called. Carrie from Cleveland, Tennessee. Thanks so much. Have a good day. We're not sending Carrie the Pontiac. Based on her testimony here, she can afford her own Pontiac. So, hey, here's a quick email from Kelly. Rob, your rule of thumb is to put 10 to 15% of my gross pay into retirement savings. Is that only the money I'm putting in, or can it also include what my company matches as well?
Yeah, well, typically we would say 10 to 15% total. And so you can just roll in what your company is matching as a part of that 10 to 15%. Now, obviously, if you can do more, assuming you're giving and doing all the other things you need to do, great. But typically we would include the match as a part of that 10 to 15%.
All right. We appreciate that email. If you have an email for Rob, send it along to questions@moneywise.org. Questions@moneywise.org. More of MoneyWise Live after this. We're MoneyWise Live, and we talk about our telephone number often, usually because we're live, but today we're pre-recorded, so if you hear a mention of the phone number, please don't call us, but you can find us online at moneywiselive.org. Matthew 25:40 tells us that the king will answer them and say, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it unto me." Let's go to Key West, Florida. Lou, thanks for holding, my friend. How can we help you, sir?
Hi. Hi. Glad to talk to you.
Sure.
I have a question about, do I need insurance? I'm 73. My wife is 68, and her health is not too good. And I'm just saying that if either one of us pass away in the next 5 or 10 years, I don't really think I have the absorbent cost of $10,000 to $16,000 for burial and everything. And do I need, or should I get an insurance policy now, and which one to help me get along at that time?
Well, Lou, I certainly appreciate the question. A couple of thoughts here. Number one, the cost of burial doesn't have to be exorbitant if you're a part of a memorial society or a cremation society. And so I would look into that just to begin to explore the various options that you have. Look for the memorial society in your area to get some information about that, so you can be planning and thinking about what you need to put aside. What I would prefer is if you figure out that you have a certain amount that you could set aside each month, perhaps equivalent to what you might be thinking about spending in the form of an insurance policy, rather than paying that to an insurance company, you could take and set that aside into savings specifically for this purpose, or in some cases you could prepay for some of these services. You know, in terms of insurance, there is a possibility that you could still get a term insurance policy. You know, a lot of people buy these in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and they're very inexpensive. But seniors in their 60s and 70s can buy term insurance policies, you know, 10-year policies, even a 15-year policy. Of course, the cost is going to be dependent upon your health condition and your wife's health condition. And so you'd, of course, want to look into that. And you'll want to have somebody, if you did decide to go this route, who really is an insurance agent representing a general agent who covers a number of companies, because depending on, you know, your age and the specific health condition you have and your wife, he or she will go probably to a certain company who treats that particular condition a little more favorably and perhaps can find better pricing. It's going to vary significantly from company to company, depending upon what medical conditions you have. But if you could arrive at a cost and really understand what it's going to take to handle the funeral and burial expenses and so forth, and you could develop a plan now to set that money aside over time, you know, that would be my preferred approach. And maybe it's a hybrid. You get a short term term policy while you're building that up, or you do one in lieu of the other. But I think those are probably one of the two places to go. Start by figuring it out exactly how much you need, and then second, determine whether it makes sense to just save it a month at a time, or you buy a small policy, assuming either of you can qualify based on your medical situation.
Well, yeah, that was my dilemma. That's why I called you, just to see if you had any insight in this. If I have to put it down on paper, my wife's health does not look good.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
So, well,
and that certainly can be problematic in terms of raising the cost dramatically, and that's where you may be better off just taking that money and setting it aside so you have it for some unexpected expense, or ultimately to cover the burial expenses and so forth. So you need to do a bit more work in exploring this a bit further. What I would say, though, is I don't like the idea of burial insurance versus life insurance. The burial insurance is very expensive and is often, given without any medical exam, with guaranteed acceptance. But that means you're in a high risk pool of people, and the premiums have to be very high in order to cover that. So I'd rather you see first if you could qualify for a term policy that does involve some medical underwriting as a starting point.
And Lou, again, we would urge you to also check out memorial societies. I'm sure there's one in the Key West area. I know there are many of them in Florida, and we know lots of people who have used these in the past. They can save you a lot of money. They're well-respected and accepted these days. Maybe it was kind of a different product 40 or 50 years ago, but that's not the case today, and this can be a real cost savings for you should you choose to go that direction. We hope that helps. Thanks very much. Chicago. Mary, what's your question for Rob West?
My doctor is part of a network that had a data breach, and so everybody that is in that network receives free credit monitoring through Experian for a year.
Yep. Yeah.
And one of the things that they they have extended it, by the way. And one of the things that they offered was locking down your credit, if you could do that, which I could. And I just want to know, does that protect me from identity theft, or should I be doing something like LifeLock or one of those other things?
Yes. I like the idea of taking advantage of that free monitoring, Mary. I just want to make sure that it doesn't auto-renew and start charging you a fee of some kind. So I'd want to understand that before you go into it. Really, the best option for you, which is now free based on a legislation that passed last fall, is what's called a credit freeze. Everybody can put a credit freeze. It is independent by each of the three bureaus, so you would need to do it separately for Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. But this is going to put a PIN number on your account such that if anybody attempted to open a new line of credit in your name, they would require, the bureau would require the PIN number, and when they couldn't provide it, they would not be able to open the account. So your question was, will that prevent somebody from stealing my identity? No, somebody can steal your identity by accessing your information fraudulently, as it sounds like, was done previously by getting your Social Security number and other important information. But what it can prevent is somebody opening a credit account in your name, because in order to do so, there would need to be a credit check. And when that freeze is in place, that credit check would likely not be able to be completed, which would prevent the additional account from being opened. So you can do that online or by calling their 800 numbers. Again, you'd have to go direct to each of the three bureaus and contact them and ask for that credit freeze. There is no cost any longer, but it is something you have to do and update periodically.
I've had this for over a year free. I think they're trying to protect all the patients in that network. And when they offered the credit freeze, it went across all three of the credit agencies.
Yeah, and that may have been part of that service that was offered to you free when the breach occurred. But I would just double check and call each of them independently and say, I just want to verify there is, in fact, a freeze in place, because that's going to be your best protection, even more so than something like LifeLock that just notifies you when there's been information attempted to be accessed.
Mary, thank you so much for calling today. That's important information. We're glad that you asked it. More Money Wise Live when we return. This is our final segment of a broadcast we previously recorded. Thanks so much for being with us today, and we hope you'll stick around and enjoy the rest of the program. Sarasota, Florida. Carla, thanks for holding, and how can we help?
Yes, I had a question. My mom will retire in October, and she will be 65 in October. Someone told her that a good strategy for retirement would be for her to liquidate her 401k, pay taxes now, and fund a Roth IRA. And all of that, the strategy would be that now her tax bracket, well, the taxes are lower now, that it would be at a later time if she decides to withdraw it. And if she decides to withdraw it at a later time, well, she already paid taxes already. But all the gains is tax-free. So the whole thing at any time is tax-free. And the first thing that I thought is, was, wow, that's like the best kept secret. Why not everyone's doing it to avoid tax at a later age or during retirement? So what is something wrong with that? Or
there are a number of considerations there, Carla, and I appreciate the question. How much does she have in this retirement account in question? Do you know, roughly?
No, that's something that she doesn't tell me, but, you know, she's been working for over 30 years, so
likely a significant amount of money. Okay, very good. Yeah, you certainly can convert to a Roth. I don't advise it in the way you're describing, in the sense that, number one, any amount that's converted is taxable in that year. So if you convert a large amount of money in a single year, it could have a ripple effect in a number of ways. Number one, it could bump that portion up into a higher tax bracket, because remember, the tax brackets increase as you reach certain thresholds of taxable income. So if you have this huge amount that you're added to your taxable income in a given year, it's likely that a significant portion of that, if we're talking about a large sum of money, would be bumped up into a higher tax bracket, perhaps a portion of it even into two brackets higher than that. So you're paying more tax than you should, which is why if you're looking at a strategy that makes sense to convert money to a Roth, you'd likely want to spread it out over a number of years. Number two, you could inadvertently trip over the threshold that results in a high income surcharge for Medicare with the same idea that you're bumping up into a higher adjusted gross income that then is causing you to have to pay a surcharge for Medicare, which you'd want to avoid. I think the other consideration is, remember, the benefit or the most of the benefit from the Roth is that tax-free growth. So the reason we like them early, you know, in your 20s and 30s and 40s, is we're willing to give up the tax deduction in the current year because we want to enjoy years and years and years of tax-free growth. Well, the challenge with the conversion in the during retirement, which makes it not as effective, is you are probably not investing with a very aggressive investment strategy. I certainly wouldn't recommend it. You're probably much more conservative, and you don't have as many years for it to grow. So the fact that your investment strategy is going to result in a lower overall return because you're trying to be more conservative and preserve your capital, and that you don't have decades for this to grow, or at least as many as you did in your 20s and 30s, then the benefit of that tax-free growth is not going to be as powerful because you don't have all of these gains from stock and mutual fund growth that you would then be able to enjoy tax-free. And then the other final thing, which you mentioned, is the tax rates. You're assuming that the tax rates will be higher in the future. Certainly they're low now, and it's likely, but again, you may not be able to enjoy as much benefit. So I think perhaps she needs to visit with a financial advisor and run through all of these scenarios, look at the amount she has, and what are her income needs in retirement to determine whether or not she's going to be drawing from this, or this is money that she could then let grow over time. But I wouldn't automatically convert that. In fact, I would discourage her from converting a large sum of money to a Roth IRA without a lot of further consideration and input from a financial advisor. And by the way, if you don't have one or she doesn't, you can find a certified Kingdom advisor there in the Sarasota area by going to MoneyWiseLive.org and just click on Find a CKA.
Carla, we appreciate you calling. Interesting question, and we're glad that you're there looking out for your mom. Thanks very, very much. Quickly to Spokane, Washington. Everett, what's your question?
Hey, guys. So my question is that there's people like me that's on Social Security. What's the best trick to save money while being on Social Security?
Yeah. Well, Everett, I appreciate the question. I think the key is, you know, we want to look for money-saving opportunities no matter what our source of income and no matter how much we have coming in. The starting point for that is to make sure you're not taking on any debt, because we don't want you paying any interest unnecessarily, and try to get out of debt if you still have any. And I realize on a fixed income, everything is needs to be considered carefully so that you use your money wisely, because there's not a lot to speak of. But many of the ideas we mentioned today, automating your savings, is really important. Even if it's $10 or $20 a month, just trying to automate some money going into savings is going to be a powerful tool for you. If you take any opportunities to reduce your expenses, that's going to help. For instance, one of the ways people oftentimes will try to save money is in the health insurance area. Our friends at Christian Healthcare Ministries can be a great way for you to reduce the cost of healthcare, depending upon your situation. I would look at that. It's a healthcare alternative. If you look for ways to perhaps pick up some money by working a few hours a week or adding some side jobs, something like that would be a great opportunity. But I think at the end of the day, it starts with the spending plan, and ultimately that's what's going to drive the opportunities you have to save in the future.
How's that sound, Everett?
That sounds good. Thank you so much. You guys are a blessing.
All right. We appreciate your call.
God bless you, sir. We appreciate that. Let's go to Pennsylvania, Sagerton, Pennsylvania, I believe it is. And Beverly, I understand you have a money-saving tip for us, huh?
Yeah, just a different way to do it.
All right.
Take a $1 bill. Anytime you get a $1 bill, look at the serial number. At the beginning of each serial number, there is a letter. Mine's name starts with a B, so any serial number that begins with a B, I save. I don't spend it. And over a period of a year, you could end up with several hundred dollars, depending on how much cash you use versus credit cards or your debit card or whatnot. But it's been a very effective way to easily save money for trips or shopping or whatever, and you don't miss it.
Oh, that's great. So you actually get out the bill every time you get one. You check for the letter B. If it has a B on it, you drop it in your pocket. And then when you get home, you put it aside with the rest of them. Is that the way that works?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I like it. Okay. That's a creative idea, Steve. I really like that.
Lucky me. My $1 bill begins with an F.
So, okay, so I guess you can buy lunch then tomorrow.
Is that what that means?
Right?
Beverly, how much money have you saved typically in a year this way?
I've had up to $500 at Christmas time.
Really?
Just and where randomly saving a dollar.
And where do you put the dollars? I mean, do you actually keep the dollars stashed somewhere?
Firebox. Yeah, I keep them in a specific space, and then that's, you know, I designated, okay, we're going on vacation. This will be our, you know, the kids is spending money or, you know, whatever.
Cool.
But
cool.
It's in an envelope in a firebox.
Beverly, we're glad that you called. You've given us something to try, something fun to do, and we appreciate that. Thanks. Hartford City, Indiana. Levi, we have just a couple of minutes. It's my understanding you're about to take a job at Youth for Christ, and you have to raise your own support. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, and you're wondering maybe about some ways to go about that. Any thoughts or suggestions we might have in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm looking for.
All right.
It's kind of intimidating being as young as I am, you know, kind of relying on myself. So I'd like to see what you guys have.
Well, first of all, Levi, I'm delighted to hear that you're working with Youth for Christ. What an incredible organization. I was actually just with one of the executives yesterday having dinner. Interestingly, it's a long story, but doing some incredible work literally all over the world. A couple of thoughts. We have just a few seconds left. Number one is I would really ask them, because I'm sure they have tons of resources and ideas. Number two, I would talk to your peers, those who have been working with the YFC for a long time and see what's worked best for them. Number three, as you know, this is relational fundraising, and you really need to be thinking about your network and opportunities you have to share the vision, because the vision of what Youth for Christ is doing is really compelling. And I would actually add, Levi, that your youth is going to be a benefit to you. I think, you know, when I'm looking for ministry opportunities to support, I want to know that it's an organization I can trust, that they're doing God's work with excellence, and that it's somebody that I want to get behind and support, because I know God's going to use them. And clearly somebody who's young, who can be used in this way, is somebody that is going to be really desirable to support. I would think about seeing if friends would invite some of their friends over for you to share a vision for what you're going to be doing. And whenever you tell the story, whether it's through letters or perhaps somebody's house over a dinner or dessert, or even just somebody that you run across at church, always connect the giving opportunity to the incredible ministry work that's being done, and really give them a vision for what's going to happen. And then over time, let's see if people will support you systematically. By the way, don't forget to go back in future years and ask that they increase that monthly support.
Those are great suggestions. Levi, we wish you the best. We'll ask our listeners to pray for you. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling friends about us. Join us again tomorrow.